And please join me in welcoming Ray Dalio to the stage. Thank you so much, Ray. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's a treat.
Thanks. So now, halfway through this conversation, I'm going to ask you to tell me how I'm doing in having the conversation. And I know that you are going to be completely honest with me in your appraisal, because your hedge fund, one of the largest, most successful hedge funds in history that you founded, that you're the chairman of, Bridgewater, has a very unique culture. Every single meeting, every single conversation inside the office is videotaped. Anyone inside the office can go review those videotapes at any time. If someone is talking about me, I can go and I can see what they said about me. After each meeting, and tell me if I'm getting this wrong, after each meeting, everyone analyzes each other in the meeting and gives them immediate feedback to say, you did a good job, you did a bad job. I have a baseball card that I carry around that tells everyone in that room if I'm good at creativity and I'm bad at organization, everyone knows what my score is. This is a unique culture. Tell me, how did you get to this? What happened to make you say this radical, transparent honesty is the right way to manage?
I'm going to tweak what you said just slightly.
Okay.
So not 100%, but let's say 99% of the meetings are taped for everybody to see.
Okay.
And in terms of that feedback, yes, we have iPads, and everybody's typing in what they think, particularly of others, as well as what's happening. And the reason is I want an idea meritocracy. So I want independent thinkers who are going to disagree. The most important thing I want is meaningful work and meaningful relationships, and I believe that the way to get those is through radical truth and radical transparency. So what do I mean by meaningful work? I mean being in a mission that you're excited about, and you know that you can get your head in, and then meaningful relationships. Relationships means that you can be totally transparent with each other, to letting each other know what your weaknesses are, what I think. Like, to me, it wouldn't be honest if I didn't tell you what I thought, or that you would feel inhibited. And it's very productive, because when you bring those things together, what happens is you try to see what's true. So how do you get independent thinkers to then put on the table what they really think?
Yeah.
And then move beyond that to find out what should be done? It's a very, very terrific, powerful force. So it's an idea meritocracy. So wouldn't you rather have an idea meritocracy? The emotional barrier is the problem that a lot of people have. It takes getting used to. So when we look at it, we think, I'll ask the people in the audience. Would you like to know what people really think about you? Honestly? Raise your hands. Who would find that uncomfortable? Raise your hands. Okay. There's your barrier, right? Now, you have to make a choice. So to me, if I don't let everybody see everything with the tapes and everything, it's the equivalent of creating spin. See, in other words, why wouldn't you let them see? If you're going to have an idea meritocracy, they should be able to see everything and ask questions. It raises interesting questions. It gets them a sense of real reality. That also causes them to be bought in, like there's no spin. Right. There's no talking behind anybody's back. When you put things out in the open and everybody looks at it, bad things happen in the dark.
So let me ask you, because intellectually I think that makes total sense, right? We all want to be in a place where we're hearing about our weaknesses, where we have an idea meritocracy, but emotionally that's really challenging, right? I want to be honest with my wife. I have learned through trial and error there are certain things to be honest about and certain things not to be so honest about, and that I need to be honest in certain ways. When you say radical transparency, if I'm giving someone feedback and I think that they're going to be hurt by hearing it, do I soft pedal it for them, or do I be as bluntly honest as I can? How do I learn to be honest?
You want to be effective.
Okay.
So you don't want them, a lot of people just want sugarcoating.
Yeah.
So you know that you have to be as accurate as possible, and they have to be as accurate with you as possible, and that you have to create a system that is not just an exchange of mutual feedback, but also data collection. We collect a lot of data.
Interesting.
For example, if people are doing certain things, we can correlate it with whether it's done well or not. So if people believe that there's a fair system, an idea meritocracy, there are personality tests, there are all sorts of ways where the evidence becomes clear that you are that kind of a person, okay? As long as you have a system that people believe is fair and that is being accurate with as being that kind of a person, that's the best you can do, okay? That's not true that everybody wants that. Not everybody wants to stand naked in front of everybody. It's a little bit like going into a nudist camp at the first time. I don't know if you've ever gone into a nudist camp, but in other words, you first walk into a nudist camp and it's very awkward, right? Everybody's looking around and, okay? Before you know it, you're talking about interesting subjects and you don't pay attention. So you can, if you can stand naked in front of other people and have them stand naked in front of you and so on, you can have actually better relationships and be more productive. So there has to be, it has to be the getting over that emotional reaction. And so it drew me to studying neuroscience. That's one of the reasons I love your book, Habit. Fantastic. By the way, I got his book and I gave it to everybody in the company, Habit.
My children very much appreciate it.
Because... But that process of developing a good habit and wrestling with what I call, you know, your logical self and your emotional self, like you said, your logical self wants it and your emotional self doesn't. And through exercise, through practice, you can bring those things into alignment and then you can get a truth and then you can have an idea meritocracy.
So tell me about how this actually plays out. Let's take a piece of hard feedback you've gotten sometime in the last couple of years. How did that happen? What happened?
I'd like to talk about the ridiculous New York Times article.
Good, let's talk about that.
Let's talk about the ridiculous New York Times article and use that as a particular example.
I think that's a great example. Okay. And I can't remember the woman's name.
Eileen Murray.
She's not the reporter, but there's a in the article. This is a piece about that ran earlier this week about Bridgewater. There's a case study called Eileen Murray Lies. So tell me a little bit about what happened there and then how you think we miscovered it, because you think we got it wrong in covering it.
Worse than that, it was intentionally done. And we'll get into why it was intentionally done incorrectly.
Okay.
But I'll go beyond that. Let me describe the situation.
Sure.
Okay, so everybody gets to watch everything, right? So a situation comes up, and we do an investigation of whether something went wrong. And Eileen, and then everybody gets to watch this tape, and they're asking her. Well, it turned out through the whole examination that what happened was she had a woman who was under stress and who was her assistant type an email message for her.
Eileen did. Eileen had this. And Eileen's a fairly high-ranking official.
Yeah. She's co-CEO. And this happened 5 years ago.
Okay.
So she had her assistant type this. Assistant's under a lot of stress. And Eileen said that she typed it.
Okay.
That was
the internal investigation.
That was the lie.
Okay.
Okay. So now you see this. Okay. It shows... Are all lies the same? What is the motivation? The motivation was to protect that person. It was under stress. So,
and everyone in the firm, everyone in the firm is looking at the tape, and they all say Eileen Murray lied. Like they all say,
well, that's
Eileen
that's lied. What we should call the tape, because there was a lie.
Right.
Okay, and the issue is: are all lies the same? What do you want to do? Do you want to fire her because of that minor, tiny thing? I mean, I'm saying that she shouldn't have done that. We discussed it. She shouldn't have done that. And we got past that particular point. But the point of the thing is, when you don't see it, and you create this false reality, okay, so how many people would have fired Eileen for lying that way?
Not many people.
Okay. When you hear the rule, generally speaking, lies are intolerable. Well, it's not all lies are intolerable exactly the same way, right? So you're getting an exposure to reality that is a good thing. So what should we do? We should not show it? Or should Eileen and everybody be crucified for that lie?
Well, what's fascinating is I think in most companies, most companies would just say, it wouldn't even come up. Like this wouldn't be, I mean, the fact that in Bridgewater this became a conversation is really interesting because your commitment to this transparency says, this small, insignificant lie, we all need to have a conversation about whether it's a big deal or a small deal.
Right, and when you then start to realize that that's what reality looks like, you know, if you're running a company and you encounter things, the rest of the world doesn't see how you're encountering it.
Right.
They have these overly simplistic views of how things are, and so you're not communicating that way. Also, if you don't have radical transparency, you're going to have a lot more problems. So by making everything transparent, you're going to have less lie. You're going to have less problems, right? And everybody's going to understand better. Isn't it better to be that way? Now let's talk about the New York Times.
Well, let me ask one more question before I get into the Times. Because what it occurs to me is what one of the things you're saying is every company except Bridgewater and companies like it, there is an element of hypocrisy, right? That we say we are a company that is honest. I mean, the New York Times in our code of conduct says we are a company that is honest. But if somebody lies about something insignificant, we just paper it. I mean, it's not a big deal. It's not even something we talk about. Is your thesis that hypocrisy is infectious? That if you have hypocrisy on these small little things, that it somehow undermines my ability to say, look, on the big things, I'm going to call you out because I think you're being wrong or I'm being wrong.
Oh, there's huge hypocrisy. I mean, I think, you know, it depends how much I want to tell you about the New York Times hypocrisy. I'll tell you another one. There was a case in which we get sued.
Uh-huh.
And rather than settle suits that are frivolous suits, we make a point of going to arbitration and getting them resolved.
Right.
Okay? And we go through that. We make, and this then gets examined by the National Labor Relations Board, and we have it, and it gets dropped. Okay? If I gave you the list of New York Times suits so there's a hypocrisy, right? There's a, what is reality? So put the New York Times aside. Can we basically talk about things? Can we put them on the table? To have an idea of meritocracy, you have to do three things. You first have to put what you think on the table. Can you do that? Can we do that? The second thing is you have to be able to have a civil conversation about it.
Right.
You have to be able to have thoughtful disagreement. I see this way, you see it this way, how do you take it? How do you become evidence-based? And then you have to go beyond that to be able to take a vote or make a decision and move on. And if you can have that idea of meritocracy, then you can have the meaningful work and meaningful relationships.
Yes.
So do you trust me? Do you trust the organization? If there's transparency and there's not spin and everybody's walking around that way, you build higher levels of trust, you build higher levels of commitment to the organization. It's magical.
You don't have to shy away.
I'll say something else. Radical transparency is coming at you.
Huh.
You can't avoid it. In other words, right here today, almost every, it's easy, pretty much, to find out from publicly available data and from various types of data what you're doing and what you're like. So we're going to move forward into an era of more radical transparency. Knowing how to benefit from that, knowing how to manage it, is something I think that is a tremendous benefit.
That's really interesting. So before we get off this, because I want to give you a chance to be radically transparent about the New York Times, what's your take on the article that we ran earlier this week?
There are journalists, writers, who are intended to be, call them investigative reporting. And they're supposed to come out with things that they think are scandalous. And as a result of doing that, they kind of weave together things in a way that's meant to be, you know, like they say, good news doesn't sell. So it's meant to be that way. So in the interactions that I've had with them, there has not been a desire to get at truth. That's the challenge of radical transparency. We're a very easy organization to look at because we have everything radically transparent.
And
so if you get you get the tapes and you see it, you can have a lot of material.
Right. And okay. A big part of this is one of the core, and you've written a book called Principles, where you've outlined many of the principles that Bridgewater and you live by. One of the is not to be defensive, right? To listen to this criticism and and try and say, is that accurate? Whether I like it or not, is that an accurate? Are you seeing something about myself or my publication that I don't see myself? Right? Am I doing it right?
Yes. Well, I think the question of whether we can know what's true through the media is a very important question.
Well, you're getting deep, man.
Well, the media is the most powerful force there is. And the question is whether you can get accuracy through the media, right?
I hope so. We try.
You know, the credibility and the rating of the media is at the lowest level that it has ever been in many, many, many decades. It's a challenge. I'm not saying what to do about it. I'm not smart enough to know what to do about it. But I think you as a journalist know that you're in an environment where the story is more important than the reality sometimes.
It's
right?
A very challenging time. Yeah, it's a challenging time. But let me ask something that's on this.
I'm just curious in the audience. Do you believe that? I want to ask my last statement. Do you believe that it's... raise your hand, please, if you believe that there's a real problem with the accuracy in the media.
Well, that's interesting. With the accuracy?
With the accuracy, yeah.
And is that... this doesn't have to be a referendum on media, but I'm curious. Is that because you believe that we're sensationalizing the story so as to entice you in, or because we're having trouble getting the right story? How many? Raise your hand if you think it's sensationalizing. And how many think it's just that we're having trouble getting the right story? Anonymous sources, which media? And I want to ask more about Bridgewater because I think it's a fascinating...
I didn't mean to get on
no,
the
New York Times. No, no, no.
But a challenge of radical transparency is the distortion. It gives you lots of material, and it can create distortions. And it really depends on who's in the hands, the information's in the hands of, and how it's used.
That's
right?
Interesting. That's very... Right, that having information gives you a perspective. So let me ask... One of the things that this conference is about building teams and building a culture that helps people be their best selves. Because you have so much data, because everything is transparent, how does that shape how you put teams together or how you decide who is in charge of whom? Because you mentioned only 99% of meetings are public. There's a 1% where you feel like these are conversations that shouldn't happen. And
well, those are really about... personal illnesses.
Okay. So it's,
sometimes there's a proprietary trade or something that we're doing. Those are the ones that get up. But virtually all the other ones are shown. So, to answer your question, it was enlightening to see how people see things differently. You have no idea how you all see things differently. That there's a thinking spectrum. Some people are creative and not reliable. Some people are reliable and not creative. And as you start to give people personality tests, like Myers-Briggs or the Big Five or different personality tests, you start to learn how people see things differently. And then when you see them differently and that screen pops up where rather than just seeing how you see it, you go above that and you're seeing that everybody is seeing things differently, it changes how you see things. Because it starts to make you think, how do I know I'm not the wrong one? In other words, as you go above it and you look down on all those different ways of seeing, you start to think, how do I know I'm not the wrong one? And how do I collectively see? And you see in a color range, it's like seeing in a different color range or going from two dimensions to three dimensions. All of a sudden, you see the full spectrum of seeing things. And then you go to the higher level, and we have systems that go through the computers that go to the higher level that say, then, how do we weigh all those ways of seeing to make the best decisions? So you don't get so attached to your opinions. I think the greatest tragedy of mankind is people holding on to wrong opinions that could so easily be rectified, and that's doing them harm because they're making wrong decisions. So how do you collectively do that? Well, the answer is by everybody seeing everything and seeing how others see, they begin to gain those perspectives. They also get to get an appreciation for the other way of seeing. used to be that everybody would drive each other crazy. Your brain works in one way, my brain works in another. Maybe I see big picture, you see detail.
Right.
Maybe I'm creative, maybe you're reliable. We drive each other crazy. When you start to realize that people are actually seeing in those ways, and that's a valid way of seeing, and that I need you, and you need me, and how to put together the team, as you're asking about, it gives you the evidence base. It's okay to be different.
And people actually have, like, they're called baseball cards, right? Like, if I'm in a meeting, I'm going to know that I'm a 7 on reliability and an 8 on creativity, and you're a 9 on reliability and a 6 on creativity, and I can actually say in that meeting, by the way, I think I should carry the day because I'm more creative than you are.
Well,
right?
The way we literally do it is we have believability-weighted decision-making. So think about it this way. Should I make the decision because I'm the boss? What happens if the others out there disagree with me, particularly if they have a higher level of believability? So we have a device that has your believability on each of our believabilities there, and then we ask ourselves, what should we do? And we have believability-weighted answers.
That's fascinating.
So that for me, I'm thinking as the boss, I look at that and I say, well, if the other people who are more believable than me are thinking that, I definitely should do what they're thinking. Or at least I should try to work through why does it make sense? Because I might be wrong. In other words, I think the markets teach you, they teach you humility and they teach you what works. And, you have to be an independent thinker in the markets to be successful because the consensus is built into the price.
Right.
So you have to have a view that's different from the consensus. And when you have a view, so I need independent thinkers. When you have a view that's different from the consensus, you're going to be wrong a certain number of times. It teaches you humility. The most important thing is to have humility and to think about how do I get the best decision? It doesn't have to come from me. Right? I just want to be right.
Right.
If it comes from other people,
that's
good.
Okay.
Right?
So before we go to questions, I want to ask you. So we've been talking for about 22 minutes. So give me the radical transparency feedback. Am I doing a good job, bad job? What could I do better in this conversation?
Tell me how you disagree.
Oh, interesting. I didn't tell you I am not disagreeing enough with you.
Do you disagree with anything I'm saying?
I think that it's a little... I'll try this out. I think everything you're saying makes sense. I think it's really hard to do.
Right.
And let me take the Times as an example. That I think you're right. Criticisms of the Times are fair, but that at the same time, finding a story that is illustrative of this world is actually harder than it seems. And so in many ways, maybe we don't have enough humility as reporters when we go in and evaluate a situation, but readers sometimes don't have enough humility to analyze how difficult it is to capture a story that tells every perspective. Because at the end of the day, you want one story. You want one perspective so that it's a clean takeaway.
I understand what you want or what they want is one simple, sensationalistic, tension story. I got it. And the world is more complicated than that.
I would agree. And well, so let me push back a little bit on this utopian, my criticism that might be utopian, which is, For your firm, where you make a handful of decisions, and those decisions have to be exactly right, because you're talking about billions of dollars in a marketplace that has no tolerance for mistakes. But if I'm working at AT&T, if I'm working at AT&T, I'm almost kind of a politician more than I am an executive.
So then
a lot of that is making people happy, right? We've heard folks on the stage saying, part of my job is to make my employees happy so they can bring their best selves to work. And if I hire right, even if there's something that's a little screwy about them, I don't have to tell them that that's screwy as long as they're happy and they're doing their best work for the job I need them to do. Why would that be wrong?
Well, first of all, this decision-making process has nothing to do with the business we're in that regard.
Okay.
In other words, I've taken through my life and other people have taken through their lives and it works at all different kinds of, and you referred to what the barrier is. Okay. The barrier is that kind of emotional barrier.
Right.
So the real question is, can you have meaningful work and meaningful relationships through radical truth and radical transparency? Or are you going to let that emotional barrier stand in your way? So, I don't know, can you have thoughtful disagreement to try to find what's true and what to do about it? Is that a good thing? Whether it's your any group of people. So, I mean, I think it's true for everybody working here. Can you have thoughtful disagreement? Can you put your thoughts on the table? Can you have that back and forth, your honest thoughts? The challenge is only one challenge. It's that emotional challenge.
Yeah.
And yes, it's hard, but success is hard. Being successful is hard. And you know what's harder? Operating that other way. Because when you're in a political environment where there's everybody's talking behind their backs and nobody knows what's true and everybody says this is true, but they're just gossiping with each other, and that's erosive, and it's not productive. So, you know, you have to tell me why it's logical to be that other way. I'm telling you there's only one barrier, and that I'd say it's much better to deal with that barrier, because the cost of failure, that's painful.
Right.
That's a lot more painful.
And I will say my closest relationships are ones where I feel like people say hard, honest truths to me, and I say them to them. Right? There's something that feels redemptive, almost religious, about saying to someone, I think you're wrong this way, and they say, I think you're wrong, and you learn something.
And we can have a quality back and forth about it. There's decision-making should be two steps. The first step is taking in information, particularly if there's disagreement, to understand that disagreement, and then to make a decision. So you have your right to make a decision. Nobody should take away your particular right to make your decision. But it's so stupid not to take the time to take in and explore disagreement that might help you prevent yourself from being wrong.
That's true. Let's go to questions, because I want to leave enough time. Right here.
Hi, so I have a question. Hi. You talked a lot about meritocracy, but there's research showing that in companies that value meritocracy, people actually make more biased decisions. So given how much kind of emphasis you place on this, I'm curious, what is your take on this research, and then how do you manage bias in people decisions in your firm, given this emphasis on meritocracy?
And do you mean unconscious bias?
Yes, okay. I do.
I can't see how that's almost possible, but I don't know the research. In other words, if you have a meritocracy, then everything, you have evidence. Well, you're producing evidence. Evidence means, let's say, if you're going to be the decision maker, what were all the data about whether you should be the decision maker? And so that authority should follow the evidence. So I don't see how a meritocracy with transparency and evidence could produce that, but I don't know the particular studies.
When someone comes in who's, you have a number of high-ranking women inside Bridgewater. When someone comes in who's a woman, who is a person of color, who comes from a non-traditional background, because one of the things we know is that in making evaluations, sometimes there is this unconscious influence, right? Do you find you need to skew for that or accommodate that, or how does that get worked out?
Well, first of all, I think that the data helps to understand what might biases exist, right? If somebody's behaving biased and you're radically transparent and you got a lot of evidence, it's pretty clear that you're going to have less bias, okay? If you don't have transparency and you don't have data to look at, you're going to have a lot more bias.
That's interesting.
Right? So you have much less of that. In terms of the issue of, I don't know what you mean by the accommodation, but everybody's different in different ways, and so it's important to understand those differences and accommodate them to get to the best result. There may be those differences. There may be psychological difference. Someone might be bipolar. Somebody might be dyslexic. Okay. To bring those differences to the surface and to understand them and to know how to deal with them so that you have a community that makes those differences, whatever they are, work well, is a really terrific thing, I think.
That's interesting. Let's go to another question. Yeah, back here.
Hi, Ray. My name is Marcella. I co-found and run a company called Alfred, which provides leverage specifically inside your home. I also was an SMA at Bridgewater and worked on the magnet. I really miss Bridgewater.
Thank you. Come back.
I have my own sandbox, though. So, Ray, I need your help.
Your what?
I have my own sandbox. You have a sandbox. I have a sandbox. Playing in the sandbox, and I need your help. Let me assert a belief, which is to live by the principles is really hard. I agree with you, and I find that that's the way I want to be. However, I don't run a hedge fund, and we don't have billions of dollars, and it's very difficult to get buy-in without softening some of your principles. People say, you're not Ray Dalio. So, do you believe the principles can apply to most companies, and the way of being can be all at once, or can we get there incrementally?
I think any group of people working together, not only a company, but even, you know, how you deal with each other, can get there through practice. And first you have to make the contract. So this is the way it works. You realize that intellectually you might want to be one way, and then emotionally it's challenging to be that way. So can I be transparent with you? Can we disagree and do that thoughtfully? Those are contracts that you have to make with each other. Once you make that contract and you realize it might be difficult, it depends how we do it well, that you then are on your journey to do it well. Any group of people can do that. If you realize that there's the emotional component of it, so that there's the challenge between your logical self and your emotional self, and that you'll go through that together and you kind of monitor it, and usually with the help of a third person, it could be just you having a disagreement with somebody and how you'd have that disagreement to help you do better. That can all happen if you remain calm, you realize that getting the truth through that exchange is such a wonderful thing. You can get there that way. But it is like a self-discipline. You have to recognize the emotional triggers. You might feel those emotional triggers. You can actually feel it happening.
That's interesting.
Okay. Realize that when those emotional triggers happen, that they'll be usually temporary. Or you might find your way of doing it. In other words, your way of doing it might be exchanging emails. In other words, because maybe that emotional way in person means that it's all coming too fast and too emotionally, so that if you could lay out your thoughts and then you can hear the other's thoughts and do it back and forth with the guidance of others, you can do that. You just have to want to do it.
So I think you're saying we can change a company one exchange at a time?
I'm sorry?
So you're saying we can change a company one exchange at a time?
Yes. That you make a contract, we're going to be that way. And you use others as a judge as to whether you are that way. When you have the radical transparency, the people who are not emotionally tied up in the situation can sort of assess, are the participants who are emotionally tied up in that situation behaving that way? And they can help you.
And the other thing that's interesting is that what I hear you saying, and tell me if I'm getting this right, is that everyone is emotional at work. Everyone has an emotional response. And setting that aside, saying don't bring the drama to the office, rather instead saying I can recognize my emotional resistances, I know how to react to them, to set them aside, to not let them infect my thinking, is a more honest way of being myself at work.
Yes, and it happens just as a natural consequence of saying that it happens.
Right.
In other words, let's all watch out for it. Let's try to control ourselves and not let that happen. How do we do it? Even maybe take a break.
Yeah.
Come back to it at another time. Because that barrier is standing in the way of what you want to do. It's standing in the way of your well-being.
That's it. Well, Ray, thank you so much. I know that there's more questions. Hopefully folks will get a chance to attack you in the hallway during this break. But I can't tell you how much I appreciate it.
It was a pleasure.
I can honestly say it's a great time.
Thank you.